launched in Prague in 2009, the European Union's Eastern Partnership is a policy project that seeks to build bridges and help support the EU's neighbours to the east, Armenia, Azerbaijan, Belarus, Georgia, Moldova, and Ukraine. In March, the European Commission published its plans for the next 10 years of the project. Tom McEncroe spoke to analyst Pavel Havlicek from the Prague-based foreign policy NGO Association for International Affairs, who was part of a team that recently published a Visegrad Insight study looking into possible development scenarios. They spoke about those plans and how they may be affected by the coronavirus.
Mr. Havlicek, last year when negotiations about the future of the programme were being discussed, I spoke to Jaroslav Kurfürst, who is the Czech Republic's special envoy for the Eastern Partnership, and he told me that back then the vision of the project was to disrupt the geopolitical logic in the area. I just want to ask you, how exactly would you define the Eastern Partnership, given that some accuse it of being a vessel for influence?
What we can see is that the original goals of the European neighbourhood policy were to bring stability, security and prosperity to the region. So these are still the valid options and valid visions for the region from the EU side. Obviously, then in 2009, as you mentioned, the Eastern Partnership elaborated on that and further added a closer political association and deeper economic integration in the EU. So these are basically the values of the policy. But we should not forget that obviously other countries, other actors in the region, especially the Russian Federation, very often understand this policy as a zero-sum game and basically sees that, as you mentioned, and the other option, the geopolitical vision and basically as a means, the Eastern Partnership as a means to fight for the region and determine the future of these countries.
Now, in those sort of parameters you delineated for the Eastern Partnership, do you think it has worked in the past 10 years?
This is a very good question, and it was very good to have the reflection that you mentioned last year, since the policy celebrated its 10-year anniversary, and this was the moment for reflection. And if everybody agreed that the Eastern Partnership has been a success so far, there was also an acknowledgement that in certain categories the policy did not deliver at least fully. So if we speak more concretely, if you mentioned the issue of prosperity, we can see that the, especially for the associated countries, Ukraine, Georgia, and Moldova, the DCFTA, the Deep and Comprehensive Free Trade Areas, actually help these countries to promote their trade and exchange with the common European market. But at the same time, if we look at the remaining two original goals, security and stability, we see that over the last decade, actually, these goals were not met. We now have another focal point of instability, which is in Ukraine, in Donbas, and we have illegal annexation of Crimea. And we also have mounting pressure on Belarus from the side of the Russian Federation, and the pressure to join the Union State and integrate more closely with Russia. So on these two areas, I can't say that the Eastern Partnership would deliver, and this is a moment for reflection.
Now, sharp listeners may have noticed, why did I say in the past years when the EU's Eastern Partnership was set up in 2009? The reason is because earlier this year, in March, the European Commission set out its strategy for the Eastern Partnership programme in the future. And I was sort of wanted to ask you, what did you think of that programme when you read it? What do you think of the goals for the next coming years?
I think this project, this vision for the Eastern Partnership, actually, beyond 2020, is rather complex and comprehensive program and set of priorities that the European Commission collected throughout the last year when it organized public consultation on the future of Eastern Partnership. So the Commission basically collected so many ideas from the EU member states, partner countries, civil society, think tank community, and other involved actors. And so what we saw on the 19th of March was basically a common mixture of these ideas, which were framed around five main policy goals, which would be stronger economy, stronger approach to good governance, new priorities of digital and green agenda, and finally also the concept of resilience, which is quite interesting actually, and partial response to the issue of security and stability that we discussed earlier. But to many, the communication was not ambitious enough because the European Commission basically avoided wider discussion on the political narrative for the region for the future. So if we say that there was a whole number of very concrete and interesting ideas also for the citizens of Eastern Partnership countries, we can't really say that this communication of the European Commission actually delivered on the future of the partnership, and it didn't outline what can happen to the Eastern Partnership within the next decade.
One of the reasons why I'm asking you is because you recently, with your colleagues from Visegrad Insights, published a paper called Eastern European Future Scenarios for the Eastern Partnership 2030, where you look into areas of cooperation and the likely future developments in the relations between the EU and the Eastern Partnership countries. I was just wondering, you know, when you read this this EU plan, what sort of scenario do you think is most likely to come out?
So in our project, we actually outlined four main options, what can happen to the region, and these would be basically more or less what we described now in the communication in the European Commission's initiative, and this would be the so-called zero scenario for us. So basically an integration to the European project by small steps without any significant political kind of promises or future, no reference to the future enlargement of these countries and them joining the European project, or also no significant concessions to the three associated countries. For example, there was an initiative called Trio strategy, which would actually give the three more progressive countries, as I mentioned them earlier, additional value for closer cooperation with the European project. But the European Commission didn't do that. So basically, this more or less corresponds to the first of the four scenarios. The other ones are basically built around the idea of closer cooperation between the EU and Russia. Another would be the EAP countries taking their own agenda in the scenario called a civic emancipation, which would basically give a very strong impetus to the local reformers and civil society that would actually strive for modernization without necessarily asking for the European perspective, which is just not on the table now. And finally, we also saw the dark scenario, which would be basically the EU being torn in itself, having a chaotic time, which actually we can see now very much, and resigning on external relations and the future of its neighborhood, including in the East.
Yes, you mentioned that last scenario. You know, how much do you think the coronavirus plays a role in this? Because many have criticized a lack of European cooperation in reaction to the virus. Do you think, as some predict, it will lead to, you know, looking inside the European Union rather than making the Eastern Partnership work? You know, could this be a negative impact?
I am convinced that there are big challenges ahead of us. So necessarily, we have to see the current pandemic as a shock for the European project, And this is not only for its domestic debate. Obviously, we have seen the tensions between the EU institutions in Brussels and the member states. So that there were many complaints that the EU institutions didn't do enough for the citizens of the individual member states, and so on and so forth. So we can see a lot of this. We can also see ongoing debates about solidarity in the EU itself and between North and South and many other internal problems. So obviously the big worry that we had, and we basically somehow elaborated on this kind of shock scenario, and we mentioned that the biggest danger would be basically the EU completely resigning on foreign policy and being kind of stuck at home. But what we have seen, in fact, I would say, was that the EU didn't resign on its neighborhood, and we can see that in Western Balkans, but we can also see that in the Eastern Partner countries, because even if the initial period was rather fragmented and the European Union's reaction was delayed, we still saw a rather rapid response in terms of reprogramming of the European Commission's funding for the Western Balkan and Eastern Partnership countries. We saw gradual return of the European Union to the region. We saw that there is a new plan, investment plan for restart of the local economies. So there is a number of initiatives, in fact, that are coming now from Brussels, and so therefore I am rather hopeful. I'm not pessimistic about this, but the actual point of the actual important milestone for the future of Eastern Partnership is actually coming up in mid-June, on the 18th of June, when the next summit of the Eastern Partnership is coming, and this should basically determine the future of the Eastern Partnership policy and the concrete content that will be there for the future.
Aside from the summit, there is also the question of how the coronavirus will affect the EU's multi-annual financial framework for the coming years. Now, there is talk, for example, of possible cuts to the European Defence Agency's spending. If we look at the Eastern Partnership, what do you think are sort of expenditures of the European Commission which you think, you know, really shouldn't be cut in order to make this project work?
I think what is important here is to have at the back of our mind that the original plan for the neighborhood, including the Eastern Partner countries, was actually to increase the funding for the region. So this was before the current pandemic started. So the plans were rather ambitious when it comes to the financial aid and investment in the region. Basically, what will happen at the end of the negotiating process, and this will take a couple of more months, we can expect some decisions likely during the second half of the year, during the German presidency of the EU. So I am still hopeful. I believe that the EU will invest significant amount of money. It might be decreased, as we are likely to see in the area of defense that you mentioned, but I would say that this will remain a priority for us, because we have seen, and I already mentioned, the reprogramming of the Commission's basically projects and programs already to some degree, and the priority there was clearly put on responding to the current crisis of medical situation and public health. It was to boost the economies and support SMEs, small and medium businesses. But it was also to basically support civil society and independent media, because everybody is very much aware that, except for the COVID-19 pandemic, we are also facing the so-called infodemics, and what Josep Borrell called the clash of narratives, the battle for narratives. And we are also seeing that in the east of Europe. So I am certain that the EU will not divert its attention from these crucial points, and among them also obviously the proposed goals that I already spoke about that were elaborated by the European Commission. And the concept of resilience, which is rather interesting in this sense, because it basically diverts a little bit our attention from a traditional military means, and it moves more closely to responding to the new challenges, including in cyber affairs, cyber security, in democratic resilience, in green agenda, and so on and so forth. So I would say that these would be the important areas that the European Commission outlined, and I am certain that these will not change too much, even despite the background of the current pandemic for the time being.
Okay, finally, I just wanted to ask you, how important is the role of the Czech Republic in the Eastern Partnership? People have sometimes criticized, you know, the Czech Republic, for example, for not sending enough money towards certain projects, such as, I believe, when there was the coronavirus equipment. They were sort of saying that it's not sending enough compared to other countries. But, you know, does the Czech Republic have some special role in this? You know, for example, maybe because it's a Central European state?
I would argue otherwise. And obviously, this is a question of resources as well and political will, and we don't always see that to a full extent, for example, from the Prime Minister Andrej Babiš. But I have to say that not only that Czechia stood at the beginning of the Eastern Partnership project that was, as you rightly pointed out, launched in Prague in 2009, but it also very kind of concretely and consistently contributed to the project, which is still a foreign policy priority for the Czech diplomacy. And finally, to the reference that you mentioned that Czechia, for example, didn't donate enough during this kind of fundraising effort organized by the European Commission, actually, for the Eastern Partnership countries, Czechia, together with the three other Visegrad partners, initiated a special fund, which is called Before East Solidarity, which actually is served as a kind of point of reference and point of, again, fundraising for the EAP countries to help them to tackle the COVID-19 pandemic. So this emerged again as one of the kind of very concrete proposals from the Czech Before presidency.
Pavel Havlíček from the Prague-based foreign policy NGO Association for International Affairs speaking to Tom McEncrow.